Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, and we are back with another end-of-season review segment, this time with Steve McGookin talking all things Tottenham Hotspur. You can find him, of course, on Twitter at Steve McGookin, and he, of course, was formerly the president of the New York Spurs Supporters Club, which you can find at nyspurs.com. Steve, an absolute pleasure having you back on to talk about Tottenham. Obviously, I'm a very biased host on these, but I just wanted to start off by talking to you about Jose Mourinho's tenure. Obviously, he started around November time, but things really picked up here since the restart, undefeated after the restart, although a couple of disappointing draws in the process there. But what have you made of the Jose Mourinho era thus far?
Hello, Kev. It's good to be back with you. Thanks for having me along again. And I'm really glad the season's over, I have to be honest with you, and I'm sure you are too. yes, I mean, Jose, you have to hand it to the marginally special one. You know, you often hear, not least from his own mouth, that we were 14th when he took over, and we ended up, you know, as well, if not better, than we could have reasonably expected at that time. I mean, obviously, if you'd told us that we had the option of, you know, playing to get into a Europa League place at that stage, we would have all bitten your hand off. And obviously, you know, this has been a strange, disjointed season for reasons that were, you know, beyond football and beyond anyone's control. But I suppose when you consider that we probably overachieved last season and underachieved this one, then you have to say, you know, job done at the end of the day. Mourinho knew when he came in what he had to do and what he wanted to do, and he got what he wanted at the end of it, as evidenced from the somewhat embarrassing celebrations maybe at the final whistle of the final. But you know, when you think about it, in fact that Palace game was something of our season in microcosm, and it was very typical of how we'd been playing for most of the season, and it also highlighted some of the things that we're going to have to address next year, or, you know, or the balance of this propensity for flashes of brilliance and then moments of zero concentration, or, you know, the idea that we go ahead and then we're just unable to hold on to it. So, you know, obviously, you know, the team were tired in that period after the break with the number of games in such a short period, but, you know, it was the same for everyone, and we'll have to work on our game management. But, you know, at the end of it all, you have to hold your hands up and say fair play to Jose for doing what he did, and here's to the start of the new Jose Mourinho era when we come back.
Yeah, his first full season coming up in what, like 6 weeks? It's not a long turnaround time before the start of the new season. As you say, finishing in the Europa League spots is what he needed to do, and he did get it done. If you had said that Tottenham would finish in the top six by the time Mourinho was brought in, I think most Tottenham fans would have taken you up on that. Do you think that there's any world in which Pochettino himself could have turned things around and gotten us a European spot, or do you think just with how deflated he seemed after the Champions League final that regardless it was time to go?
Yeah, I think there was that hangover, really, wasn't there? I mean, you know, you and I have talked many times before about the Poch situation and how we felt about that in terms of his relationship with the fans and how important that was. But at the end of the day, it was his relationship with the players that really mattered. And if I'm honest, and it breaks my heart, but I have to say, you know, probably no, I don't think he could have got us to that same place. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't want him back. I'm just pragmatic enough to know that it probably won't happen under the current ownership.
Yeah, so Unfortunately, I think I definitely agree with you there. And much as we all loved Poch, and we, I don't think as a fan base love Mourinho by any stretch. I do think it was just a special thing with Pochettino. And when he said he hopes to come back someday and win a title because he feels he has unfinished business, there is definitely a part of me that just hopes that that's true and that he'll go somewhere else, win some trophies, and then come here and do the same.
Well, I'm just a little older than you, Kev, so I just hope that I live to see it. That's the I know it's always out there, like the you know the promised land of Poch leading us to the title. So that's something to work for.
Yeah, and in the bad Mourinho times, there were definitely some memes going around of "You're not my real dad" shouted at Mourinho after Pochettino's quotes about returning. But
yeah,
we'll leave the Pochettino era there behind us. As we've mentioned, we're thoroughly into the Mourinho one, so you can almost bifurcate the season into the Pochettino half and the Mourinho half. On the whole, though, what would you rate the season, considering we did still manage a European spot?
Well, you're absolutely right. I think that you can't not look at the pre-break and the post-break situation and look at them together. So if you'll permit me, I'll give us a 4 out of 10 for the first part of the season and then a 7.5 out of 10 since the restart because, you know, obviously neither have been good enough. But the level of improvement, not necessarily in our playing style, but in the application and determination and the pragmatism that we've brought to some of the games warrants that difference. But as we were saying, there's still areas to address. I mean, the specific highlights, I think, for me were most recently, I suppose, not crumbling in the North London Derby and being able to come back and win that game in a game that really could have gone either way and we wouldn't have had much of a complaint about either outcome. And then I think going back to the first half of the season was the win over Man City in February. But you know, having said that, there were precious few performances that we can look back on with joy this year, and plenty of performances you know that we would want to forget. I mean, Bayern obviously, and then then also that was compounded by losing 3-0 at Brighton immediately afterwards. You know, that was I think a lower point than the Bayern game itself. But as well as you know, if you look at our fixtures over the year, there were just too many games this year that we ended up losing by the odd goal. And obviously that's going to be something that Jose is going to want to address next year as well, is to improve that resilience. But, you know, we ended up where we are. Sixth, I think, is probably a fair reflection of Mourinho's overall impact on how we addressed the season. I mean, I was on with you one time before, and we were kind of pessimistic. This was before the return, and we were pessimistic about what it would mean and how the remainder of the season would play itself out. And obviously, there were situations where there were only a limited number of games to complete to finish the season. And I suppose it was the right decision to do it as long as we could make sure that everybody involved was safe. And we're seeing, you know, with other sports, I mean, baseball, for example, is experiencing the problems associated with starting a season from scratch and not being able to, you know, cope with unforeseen difficulties that come up. But, you know, I'm glad we did the season. I'm glad the Premier League pressed on. And it turned out it was, as I say, it was the same considerations for all the teams. I feel a bit sorry, I have to say, for Sheffield United, who actually had a great season. But maybe they'll be thinking that, you know, to get into the Europa League would have been fun, but probably an unnecessary distraction for them, because what they need to do is concentrate on consolidating that great finish next year. And Wolves, of course, will find out tomorrow whether they qualify for a competition that they've already been playing in for a year. Another great season for them and Nuno and between them and us, you know, as it just came down really to the challenge of the run-ins, the two run-ins. So, you know, glad we ended up where we did. Glad the season progressed. Glad we're in a position to sort of build on it for next year.
Yeah, and I was kind of looking at our running compared to Manchester United? Because at the restart, it kind of looked like we were the two that were primed to really surge up the table. Even if we had beaten them with the other results that we dropped, we still wouldn't have caught up with them because of how well the rest of their season went. So hard to feel too bad about that. Although it is worth noting that we had 11 losses, which is a lot. But Leicester and Chelsea both had more. We lost a lot of points to draws this season, which, as you say, based on kind of some of the weird and error-prone or set-piece goals we let in that you assume would decrease under Mourinho long-term, could have really led to a very different season for us. And that's not counting all of the injury stuff, but you can't blame everything on that, to be sure. Up and down year, obviously. But who was your player of the season and young player of the season?
Well, I think it's, you know, the usual suspect, really, for player of the year. I mean, Harry, Hugo, Son, I thought Moura played really well. And Son, of course, I don't know if you caught it, deservedly won the match of the day, goal of the season for that solo effort against Burnley. But again, it's consistency. It comes back to consistency. And I think I've actually had a new appreciation for Ben Davies this year. And how he has performed and how consistent he has been. And I've also been impressed by how Bergwijn has slotted into the team. And again, I'm looking for him to be a little bit more consistent next year. So happy with those. I mean, as for young player, I really liked what I saw of Tanganga, and I'm very, very happy that he has signed a new long-term deal. And it's also exciting for a couple of the other young players that have you know, taken a giant step in their careers. I mean, Oliver Skip signed a new deal, and he's probably going to go out on loan. The talk here is that if Scott Parker takes Fulham back into the Premier League, that would be where he would end up, and that would be a very good move for him, I think. And by the same token, Ryan Sessegnon might end up going out on loan again this year, and I just wonder if Fulham were to come back up, whether he might end up going back there for a year, you know, who knows. But the key one, I think, is Troy Parrott going to Millwall for a season-long loan. And that's a really good competitive place for him to play. I mean, obviously it's not it's in London, so it's somewhere that, you know, the club can keep a close eye on him. But, you know, I hope for the best for all of those players. And I think that going out on loan to clubs that are going to be competitive gives them a good chance to build that foundation of regular appearances and giving them a good solid experience. So generally, I'm optimistic about our young players coming through.
Yeah, hard to discount any of those potential candidates. I didn't really think about Tanganga because he just got such a brief run in the in the team, and then got injured, and then there was coronavirus, and he came back and got injured again. But yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. Was his debut the Liverpool match, like left back or something?
That's right.
Not his natural position, and he really held his own. And I think that's what's most impressive about what he's done thus far, is he's never looked out of step, even at his not natural position at a higher level. Like, it just really seemed to hit everything as naturally as he could, which is really impressive. So yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. And I know a lot of people think that if you don't kind of give the player of the year to Harry Kane, that you're just like avoiding the popular pick. But Son was involved in 24 goals, I want to say, double digits in both goals and assists this season. If he isn't at this club, we finish way worse than we did this year, especially considering the massive drop off in chances created. So we're gonna work our way up to talking a little bit more about Harry Kane here. But some things that Harry Kane has been hit with is he's taking way fewer shots. His shot accuracy has gotten worse by the eye test. He has looked more sluggish and stuff like that. Looked pretty good since the restart, to be honest. But I've always wanted to highlight this other point. I mentioned there Sonny ended up having 13 assists this year, leading the team. But Tottenham as a whole, over the last five seasons, finished first, fourth, and fourth in chances created. This year, 10th. With Eriksen's struggles and then departure, nobody has filled that void. We have a lot of ball carriers, Lo Celso, Dele, and Ndombele if he stays, but nobody is there setting up the final pass. And so when people try to levy these issues against Kane, I think the issue is not Kane himself. The issue is behind him. But that having all been said, hopefully I haven't narrativized too much before asking you, what have you made of Harry Kane, and do you think he's now, air quotes, back?
I totally agree with everything you just said, and I think Harry is the sort of striker that depends on the service that he gets. And it is interesting that you mentioned about Son's assist rate as well, because what we've been dealing with this season has been obviously the absence of Eriksen plus the fall off in Delhi and Delhi's production. So that was important. That you're absolutely right about Son. If we didn't have Son this season, especially with Harry's injury, we would have been in trouble. And also, don't forget, he got into that fight with Hugo that actually sparked our revival at the end of that game. So it was always going to be difficult, I think, for Harry, you know, coming back from that injury, and the break in the season was probably the best thing that could have happened for his recovery. But you know, when you think about just how absolutely central he is to everything we do and everything we plan around, you know, it was his birthday, 27th birthday, just last week, and the only player to score more Premier League goals before their 27th birthday is Rooney.
Yeah, who started 4 or 5 years earlier?
Right, that absolutely right, absolutely right. So I think we've probably now got into the situation where we kind of expect to lose Harry for a certain number of weeks each season through injury. It's actually got to that point. But that doesn't in any way negate the incredible influence that he has and the way in which he dictates how we set up and how we play. But you're absolutely right to highlight the service and the chances created. I think Lo Celso, I think, will come good. He's not quite in Eriksen's league in terms of that just yet, but I think there's every reason to be optimistic that we'll get more consistency out of him.
Yeah, I absolutely love Lo Celso. I'm just not sure he's an air quotes number 10. Of course, Mourinho's system doesn't require one, but if it's Lo Celso and Dele Alli in a 4-3-3 both going forward, yeah, is that enough? Time will tell. But yes, I do love Lo Celso as well. Just finishing up on Kane, despite all of his injuries and struggles, still finishes the season with 18 goals. Only 4 players, I think, finished with more this season, and he did it in his first season ever with less than 100 shots.
Yeah.
So, like,
I hadn't heard that stat. That's really interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
Good for him.
He had 81 this season. Never before had he had less than 100. So, pretty big drop off. Still scored 18 goals. Pretty big goal drop off as well, obviously. Yeah. He was averaging 20 plus, 21, 25, 29, 29, then 17 last season. Yeah. But it should also be noted that because of the coronavirus layoff, he only wound up playing 100 more minutes this year than last season. And I think because people think that Kane had this big injury and he was out for months, that he missed way more time this year than last. But because of that layoff, he really didn't.
That's right.
Which is an interesting caveat to all of that. But eye test to you, does it feel like he's air quotes back?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think the first couple of games back after the restart, you could tell he was 60, 65% fit. But I think by the end of the season, he got back to where he is. But I think it's absolutely, as you say, worth restating this idea that he's as good as the service he gets.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's talk about somebody at the other end of the spectrum. We mentioned Lo Celso in particular. First season did really well, looking for great things from him. The other big money signing in that summer, of course, is Tanguy Ndombele, who is the heir apparent to Moussa Dembele, who had left. I've gone on rants before about how their play styles aren't as similar as people would try to point out. Never has that been more evident than in the effort put out by either of them. Tanguy Ndombele dropped by Pochettino before the end of his era. I think he got a few starts under Mourinho before he ended up being dropped there. I think he was part of both Norwich losses, the one in the league and the one in the cup. Very quickly falling out of favor towards ever since the restart. Anytime he didn't start, a story would pop up in the French press about him wanting out. We continually hear these things since the season has ended already. Are we going to do a swap deal with Inter to get rid of him? What do you think we should do with Tanguy Ndombele, our highest ever priced player? Obviously has all the talent in the world, but just hasn't been able to put it together.
No, absolutely. £55 million. I mean, it takes an awful lot to admit that something isn't right with your record signing. But here's what I'd say. He's 23. It's his first season in the Premier League, which is a wholly different environment to what he'd played in before. He's also coming in at a time when there was, grief between one manager going out, another manager coming in, the uncertainty of trying to rise above that and play your game. But, Inter, as you say, seemed interested, but it looks like Mourinho wants to give him another season. And then, but then everything Mourinho says right now is inclusive. And he obviously doesn't want, I think, to lose any pieces of the puzzle until he's completely convinced they don't fit. And I don't think he's reached that point yet where he's convinced that Ndombele doesn't fit into what he wants Spurs to be. And you know, frankly, we say this about Mourinho all the time. He's been around the block enough times that you have to trust him on how he rebuilds the team in his image. So I think, obviously it's a very long transfer window coming up. But I would imagine he would be with us at the start of the season, and you would see Mourinho try and figure out pretty quickly what he can get out of him. So yes, no, the kid is 23. You know, that's what I'll say for him, and he is, as you say, he's got all the talent in the world.
Yeah, it really reminds me of Son's first season. I don't know if you remember when we had signed Son, he actually propped up with a plantar fascia injury in his foot. And so his first touches were terrible. His entire first season, which if you think about now is like, what? But he's so good with his feet. But had trouble adjusting to the league, had trouble adjusting into Pochettino's high press. It just didn't work out the first season. There were talks about us loaning or selling him after that first year. And it just kind of feels similar. Although you would have hoped that Ndombele would have been in a better situation with senior France internationals like Sissoko and Lloris at the club.
Right.
So that's a little bit more concerning. Also, there was this weird rumor that was floated that he was having really bad dental problems and that running was hurting because of his jaw, which anyway is another connection I made with Son, of like a really weird arbitrary injury that like could be a factor.
Right.
But all of that to the side, I agree. I think we should definitely hold on to him. Even if you go back and look at some of his highlights just in a Tottenham kit, don't go back and look at Lyon, even though they're incredible, especially the City and Barcelona matches.
Yeah.
Even what he did in his few minutes on the pitch were still great. The issue was the amount of minutes on the pitch, the amount of effort that he showed tracking back, because when you bring up why he didn't play since the restart, I, without having done much research, because covering football is no longer my job, without doing all of that, my remembering is that I don't think we were chasing a game outside of the Sheffield United match. I think we scored first in almost all of them. So if you don't trust a player's effort defensively and you have a lead, why would you ever bring him on?
Yes. Like, that's a very good point. And I think it plays into something else that you said in the previous thing where comparisons with Musa really don't help him, because you know that Musa would track back and would be there to break up play in a very reliable and consistent way. And I think those comparisons, I think, don't really do him a lot of favors. But yeah, I'm optimistic that we'll get more and better from him this coming season.
Agreed, but I will hit you with one small caveat before we shift away from this topic. If we could get back every cent that we paid for him last year to use to spend under Mourinho to get him players that he wanted, knowing that the two of them haven't worked thus far, if you get 60 million and just poof, he's not on the team anymore, do you take that? Or do you think regardless, get the most out of him?
I would personally take it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where we're at. But, you know,
only because I think it's fairer on an incoming manager.
Yeah.
To be able to say, you know, build a team in your image, not, you know, to a certain extent, you have to work with the players we have, but any resources that you can turn over to an incoming manager are obviously will result in a better outcome, I think. But that's not to say he's not a great player. It's up to Mourinho to figure out whether he's a great player for us.
Right. And I guess that's why I know this is a hard hypothetical to ask, but like if we get offered 40 million, my answer is no. If we get literally everything we paid for last season, then I'd be way more likely, but obviously not up to us. And we'll see what happens. And if he's wearing a Tottenham kit and he starts one of the first couple of matches next season, I will be delighted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, hopefully he can turn things around. So if he's not on the outgoings list, who else at Tottenham do you think might be, and what positions do you think we'll need to strengthen?
It's going to be a very long transfer window. I think we can't predict really the ins and outs for now. Juan Foyth is possibly on the bubble, as you Americans like to say. Only because you get a sense that I'm not sure Mourinho really feels like he can use him in the way that Pochettino did, and maybe that's no bad thing. In terms of, you know, what we need and who's coming in, I mean, there's been a lot of talk here about Philippe Coutinho but the price that Barca wanted for a season's long loan just initially seemed way too steep, and now it looks like he might end up at Arsenal. Anyway, but I think we do probably need another creative attacking midfielder. And as we were saying, next season, I think will be a crucial one for Dele Alli.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The interesting thing about incomings this year is I don't know if I've ever seen a more talented group of players get relegated before, with some of the players at Bournemouth, some of the players at Norwich. I'm blanking on who else went down. Watford, right? No, they're all right.
I'll tell you. No, I've been thinking about this. They have a kid, Sarr.
Oh, Ismail Sarr. Yeah.
Yes, he looks the business. I think in a better team, he could actually prosper quite well.
I definitely agree. Though the wide areas aren't necessarily where you'd think that we would want to improve. For Norwich, I think Emi Buendia would be a great selection. I think he finished pretty high up in the chances created charts on a relegation fodder team. Yeah. I think that would be a pretty cheap one. The deal that I'm rooting for the most isn't Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. That's fine. I'd much rather sign Baptiste Santamaria from France there. But if we get Højbjerg, that's great. Premier League experience, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the one I really want is Callum Wilson. So,
oh, really? Okay.
So he's currently bandied about in the range of 15 million and less. And if we sell both Danny Rose and Kyle Walker-Peters, we're going to be looking down a very dangerous barrel of homegrown player issues. So you bring in an English player. He scored 15 plus goals in a Premier League season before. Pochettino loved him for years, and that probably means that we've scouted him before. So he probably has some, you know, recognition of the people that might be calling him. Obviously the regime has changed, but Daniel Levy and I think Steve Hitchin now is the head scout. You'd imagine there's still some stuff there. You offer him a chance to come up. We haven't had much luck except at the extremes of age. You bring in Llorente because he's really old and he knows he isn't going to start ahead of Harry Kane. You bring in Vincent Janssen. He's really young. He knows he's not getting ahead of him. So bringing in a player that is 28, going on 29, English, has already played with him, has already played in multiple levels in England, is just one that I think would be terrific. He has size. He has pace. He can finish. And as a backup for Harry Kane, you don't have to change too much of your style if he's playing instead of Kane. But if you bring him on alongside Kane, he can provide something different, being the quicker player of the two. So that's one, as long as it isn't like 20 million and up. Like this is a bargain, like he went down, let's see what we can get him for thing. But that's the one I'm like, I want it. Whether or not it happens, you know, who's to say. The other position, and I did kind of want to get your thoughts on this. So we've basically scouted every center back in the world under the age of 25 this season. I think preparing for Well, at the time, Dyer was a midfielder. Jan Vertonghen was on his way out. Toby hadn't signed his extension yet. So there were just a lot of question marks at that position for us. All of a sudden, things very clear. Vertonghen ends up leaving, which we'll get to in a second. Dyer now fully moved back to center back under Jose Mourinho. Tanganga coming through. So we have a lot more depth there. Do you think that we should invest in the center back line this season? Or do you think with Dyer, Sanchez, Alderweireld, Tanganga, and Davis as a fill-in that we're probably okay there?
It's a solid line, I have to say. And you're absolutely right. There were, and as you say, we'll come on to talk about Jan in a second. But yes, there were moments at which you thought, well, is this really the right partnership that we have? I really like the idea of Sanchez, the fact that he learned from both Jan and from Toby, that was a great opportunity for him to improve his game. And I'm looking for him to actually step up next season as well. But I don't know about whether we absolutely need another center back until Toby's extended contract runs out. Then it's a possibility that we might have to look around for someone else. But talking about Bournemouth and the relegated players just for a second as well, going back, I mean, I know we talked about Nathan Ake. He looks like he's off to Manchester City. Yeah. Now, he was always going to be Bournemouth's expensive diamond, wasn't he? He was always going to be the player they had the most leverage through selling. And the other one that I know a lot of Spurs fans were keen on was David Brooks. But I don't think we need another player of that ilk. So the Højbjerg situation, yes, as you say, if it plays out, then that's fine. It's a long transfer window, and Southampton are going to want to, you know, leverage as much as they possibly can for their captain. I mean, the guy's the club captain. So there's that consideration. But it's not the end of the world, I don't think. I think Dyer has reverted pretty well to the back four. I don't think it's the end of the world if we don't strengthen, but I think we'll probably have to look at it at the end of next season.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And then the other relegated player that I think we're definitely going to take a look at is Max Ahrens. Personally, yeah. I think it's very silly that we're thinking of selling Kyle Walker-Peters as part of the Højbjerg deal and then just signing another young English right back that hasn't really proven it yet. That just seems really odd to me. But if the window ends up being you bring in Højbjerg, Wilson, and Ahrens, I don't hate that. Is it the window that Mourinho is used to having? Yeah. No, but it fills the very clear gaps in the squad. And that, of course, assumes that Sessegnon can blossom at left back or Tanganga can fill enough there if needed. But yeah, I actually think the squad is in decent shape, especially in a year where consistency is really going to be a benefit. Because the more players you bring in this summer that are supposed to be in your starting 11, the more danger I think clubs will be in, which is one of the reasons why I'm a little worried for some of the promoted teams, because there's often a lot of change at those clubs, and with only a month basically to figure it out, I think that could really kind of leave some of those teams in a bad situation, kind of like Fulham when they came up. Of do you stick with the team that brought you up, knowing that they're probably not good enough to get you safe, or do you make a lot of changes and have a whole bunch of random people and then just see if it works out? So
United showed that you could do that and still perform particularly well in your first season. I think it's going to be really interesting to see Bielsa in the Premier League if he stays, which it looks like he will. It is going to be really interesting. And you mentioned Max Ahrens, another. I should, because I'm calling from Belfast today, I should give a shout out to Northern Ireland right back Jamal Lewis as well, who I will be surprised if he stays with Norwich for much longer, maybe one more season. But he has also got tremendous upside, I think.
Yeah, but it sounds like from neither of us are we expecting a big transfer window stretch.
And neither is Jose, so I don't think we should kid ourselves about that.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 3 to 5 incomings, because with Rose, Walker-Peters, Jan's retirement, and all that stuff, that there will be spots. So I just don't think we're going to spend a lot in each of them. But we flirted around it enough. It's time to talk about it. Jan Vertonghen, a terrific servant of the club. If there was any player that really epitomized the rise of Tottenham as a club, stature-wise, since joining. It's really him, because Bale helped start it, but then he left. It was Vertonghen that was right at the end of the AVB and Sherwood eras, and then really ascended with Poch up into this Mourinho time frame. Unfortunately, he won't be here for the first full season. What did you make of Jan Vertonghen's time at Tottenham, and where do you think he ranks among some of the better defenders that you've seen at the club?
Absolutely one of the best, most reliable, consistent defenders that I've seen in the last, 15, 20 years, probably. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. Bringing him in at that, the molding period, his relationship with, I think also his relationship, not everybody talks about the partnership with Toby, but I think his relationship with Moussa Dembele and the, that sort of Belgian connection that allowed them to be that spine, to be the spine in the team. I mean, I think that's very underrated, and I'm just incredibly grateful to have seen him playing as well as he did. And as I say, just going back to what we were saying about Davinson Sanchez, I mean, it so good. I mean, how good is it for somebody like Sanchez coming through to have somebody like Jan Vertonghen to learn from and to play alongside and just to observe. So, very, very grateful to Jan. What a great career he has had with us, and I hope he goes on to bigger and better. Well, not bigger and better things, but at least as successful things with someone else. And his, that late goal, that late header that he scored against Wolves season, arguably that's the difference between us missing out on the Europa and actually finishing where we did. So very grateful to him, and good luck.
Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. One of my favorite Jan Vertonghen memories, outside of getting to see him play live several times, was, I don't know if you remember this, you and I were in a hotel watching on a laptop in Cincinnati, and it was the Bale-Vertonghen game where we scored two goals. One was a Vertonghen assist to Bale over the top, and then the second one, Bale assisted to Vertonghen over the top, who had made a deep run from central defense, which I guess we're now more used to seeing with Sheffield United and their underlapping center backs TM. But I will always remember that game, because it was just like, why is Jan just randomly lobbing the ball up to Bale, who, if people don't remember the goal, I'm sure you can find it was against Swansea. He basically didn't lift his leg back. He just like hit it from where his standing leg already was and just hammered it into the back of the net. And then the Vertonghen one, he just flew out of nowhere. Like, you see somebody streaking into the channel, and you're like, oh, who's that? Is that Scott? Oh, no, that's Jan Vertonghen. Why is he there? I'll always remember that. I'll always remember the game where he had two disallowed goals. The one ended up being called an own goal, and the other one he got called for offside, even though he had received the pass in our own half. I want to say that was against Sunderland or Stoke. All those were fantastic. And then obviously the Borussia Dortmund match last season, where he was forced to deputize at left back and gets a goal and an assist. And I do wonder if more than the other players, the amount of matches that we had in the Champions League, the intensity level of them, if that just like, if he put everything he had left physically into last season, and then it just didn't happen this year, because even under Poch, he wasn't starting regularly this year. Yeah. And some of that may have been Sanchez's development, although he still has a couple of key flaws in his game that hopefully he'll continue to iron out. But yeah, just I absolutely loved Jan Vertonghen at the club, and it is really interesting watching where we were when he started. Yeah. And where the site is when he leaves. Also, I do want to touch on the Belgian point that you made. Which is, not only did he and Moussa come into the club basically as best friends, and then they were roommates for the duration that they were both at the club, but both of them being there is what led Nasser Chadli to be interested in joining the club, and he had a very nice brief run with us. It's also what helped lure Toby Alderweireld to the club. So even off the pitch, the impact that relationship had wound up just being massive, and in every single aspect, I feel he'll be missed.
That's very well put, Kevin. Absolutely right. And you made a good point that I hadn't really considered about how much energy and emotional energy that he expounded during the Champions League games. And yes, that's a very, very good point as well. Yes, I totally agree with everything you just said, and that was really well articulated.
Thank you very much. Also said it was probably time to go. It's probably time for a step down, heartbreaking as it is. Personally, I would have been fine with paying his wages as they were for the next 2 years and have him retire and join the coaching staff and all of that. But yeah, it was probably time. And I will say the really interesting thing is all of the kind of online flirting that's happening right now between Ajax and Jan Vertonghen is really interesting. I think I'd like him to go to a club our size or larger, hopefully in a foreign league. Kind of in a kind of trophy achievement way at this level. Yeah. If he went back to Ajax, obviously he'll win stuff, but I don't know if he's regressed that much yet. But regardless, obviously hope the best for him, and he'll definitely be missed. We'll go from there to talking about the Europa League. We obviously were talking about how his goal against Wolves is a defining factor in us making it over them right there at the end of the season. So you and I have talked off air before. I'm actually pretty pro us playing in the Europa League, although the fact we're about to loan out all the players I was excited about getting to see get experience for us kind of throws a wrench in it. But obviously people in the past have kind of said it's a curse to a season because it's all these extra matches that don't mean anything. But it is another route towards a Champions League spot. It's another route towards a potential trophy. And of course, as everyone brings up, Jose's been in it twice and won it twice. Are you excited about the prospect of playing in the Europa League this season, or are you thinking it's going to be a bit of a drain on the squad?
No, I'm excited about it. I think exactly for that reason, for the reason that you said, Jose gives it a whole other luster, doesn't he? He says, you know, well, he's been in it twice. He's won it twice. I mean, that how could you not be excited to see what he can do in a competition that he knows so well? And also bear in mind, Kev, you know, remember how we used to agonize about actually getting into it? And it's not that many seasons ago. And that was when we had a much less good, solid, consistent squad than we have now. So I think we're actually, you know, having ended the season on something of an upswing, I think, you know, we're actually pretty well placed to build on that going forward. And I actually trust Mourinho's mentality, and I trust his optimism about the Europa League. And I know it's a very schizophrenic competition, and it's I suppose in danger of becoming even more marginalized as the Champions League becomes more important in terms of, you know, the post-pandemic, how we approach football in the post-pandemic world, because you know that if there are changes to the schedule to be made, that they're not going to have fewer games in the Champions League. So I think the whole structure of the Europa League is something that we're going to have to watch going forward. But you know, for us, this is where we are. Where we ended up is definitely, I think, better than missing out. I think you probably know better than I do. We start off with a second qualifying round in the middle of September.
So if Arsenal win.
Oh, right. Is that, yes, that's right.
Yeah, if Chelsea win, we go straight to the group stage.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, then that's good to know. That's good to know. Oh, what happens if Wolves win it?
It doesn't matter. They'd be going through as European champions. Only, I think it's 7 clubs can go into European competitions domestically, but that's a European trophy, so it doesn't count against us.
Right. Okay, cool. So we're definitely in?
Correct.
Okay, well, that's all. You see, again, that's one of those things that people use to undermine the Europa League is, you know, how strange it is to actually qualify for it and you know, end up having to go to Belarus or San Marino on a, you know, wet Thursday afternoon. But I'll take it. I'm very happy with it. Obviously, Jose's optimistic about it. And that potential road, as you say, into the Champions League gives us something to focus on. So, yes, I'm happy with it as part of the expectation for what we do as a club for the coming season.
Yeah, totally agree with you. When I was saying it's going to be a bummer if we finally start loaning out players, if it is Skip and Parrott that go, you'd think those two would have gotten a lot of minutes for us in a Europa League run, but still a lot of young players. Tanganga and one of Walker Peters or Aarons, it feels safe to say. If Ndombele stays, you'd imagine that's a pretty, air quotes, low stakes place to start him would be the group stage. Although he tends to show up in bigger matches, so I'm not sure how that would go, but we'd learn a lot more. Jedson, right, who we have on loan for a whole nother year,
right. Yep.
He doesn't have a best position yet. He is clay that can be molded to become whatever kind of midfielder Mourinho wants. you were just talking about how you hope Davinson Sanchez takes a big step forward, but also we just gave Eric Dier a big contract, and we've clearly seen that Toby is still our best defender. So whoever misses out of that group will get all those minutes. Sessegnon, if we keep him, that gives him a lot of chances for minutes. The Bergwijn versus Lucas thing resolves that. One of them gets to get their minutes in the majority elsewhere while still being an impact sub in the Premier League, which is just the role that the two of them were switching back and forth. And central midfield, where we have a gajillion players of Winks, Sissoko, Lo Celso, Dele, if you want to count him, and Ndombele, who I already mentioned. Like, there are so many players there. And then if Skip's loan doesn't go through for whatever reason, that's another player in there. I know we really like Harvey White in the academy, who can play left back or central midfield, that you can throw into that mix as well. I'm sure people have heard Dennis Sirkin's name thrown around a bit. It sounds like he'll be training with the first team. So basically, and this is the thing that we've talked about before, is the Europa League is where Kane and Townsend and Bentaleb and Mason and Winks. It's where all of those players got their starting minutes. And so to see us kind of returning on the funnel between the academy and the first team, I know a lot of people, you know, will hit Mourinho over the head with not being good with youth, but he came to a club where he's going to have to rely on youth. We can't go out and buy him a $60 million player on a whim that'll fill a role. So having to engage with that process a lot more, and we have a fairly talented crop coming up. None of the star ones that we've had in the past, although typically our star academy players leave and turn out to not be that good. But we have a decent crop of youngsters coming through that if we can get them minutes in the Europa League and really grow them into the squad, could at least take first team spots, if not starting 11 ones.
I was just going to say the Europa League was the place where we found out that Harry wasn't a goalkeeper.
We did, although he did get his hands to it, which I will always be impressed by. We will wrap up with expectations for next season. I'm really glad you brought up the Jose Mourinho thing, because rumors are that we don't care about our league placement next season. That Jose is literally like, win something. Because I think that's interesting in that it's reflected in some of his previous clubs. Like, even in the bad Chelsea year, I think they still won a cup. Could be wrong on that. Manchester United obviously missed the Champions League, but won the Europa League and then got in that way. So I kind of believe that. And it's also just so refreshing to hear, after how Pochettino continually downplayed the importance of domestic trophies. Is that kind of how you're feeling, trophy or bust? Or do you think he'll have to always walk that fine line of you have to get top four for the financials and then get trophies for the glory?
Yeah, I think it's partly that. It's the financial considerations and the pressure to get into the Champions League, or at least challenge for it. But I think at the end of the day, Kev, what I would really, really like to see us do next season is to get back to playing the sort of football that we're capable of with this group of players. I mean, there's no doubt that we have a talented group of players here, and it's just a matter of kickstarting them and making sure that we can leverage their best talents. And regardless of where we finish in the league, as long as the fans are happy with the football that we're playing, and God knows, you know, they haven't been, we have to address that. But I think let's just let the results fall where they may, but let's be pragmatic about how we organize the team and who we bring in and what we do. I mean, I would really like to have a good run in the Europa League, but also, as you say, get back to challenging for top four again. I mean, it's going to be hard not to finish at least where we did this season, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on us to at least do that. But, you know, both Chelsea and United will be strengthening, and City have gotten their Champions League reprieve. So, you know, that we have a good solid base of players to build on. And really, this comes down to, you know, let's see what Jose can do. If he can put his money where his mouth is, or, you know, put Levy's money, such as it is, where his mouth is, then you never know. And also another thing, just not on a player situation, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this Luis Campos situation. If he can end up getting his preferred director of football to come and work with him, then who knows where things might go from there. But I'm generally optimistic, but, you know, this is Spurs we're talking about.
Yeah, obviously the dream is still Luis Campos, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen this year. But hopefully we're in good enough position to take advantage of that relationship in the future. I totally agree with you. If I had to guess, I think that we will win something next year. But the other side of that is that it's not a fan expectation. It is the expectation. It is the point of Mourinho being at this club, is to get us over the trophy hurdle. So while I do personally, I genuinely think that it is likely that we win something this year, you also have to consider that not winning something this year could very quickly escalate Jose Mourinho's departure from the club. So it's kind of high stakes for Mourinho next year. I don't think it'll feel high stakes to us as fans. I don't know if the players will even feel that urgency. I think players like Kane will, and maybe Son, where, you know, if neither of them win something and then they're both 28, 29 plus, that's when you start to get to that, okay, I gave you my time, where's my reward place. But I think that we will, especially from the outside looking in, like the media way, I don't think there will be that many expectations on us this season. I would absolutely settle for sixth in a trophy, any of them, really, preferably the Europa League, because then that means we still get Champions League. But I'm very much looking forward to a season wherein we're clearly prioritizing the cups after all the Pochettino years of him basically just saying, why does it matter? So
right, absolutely. I mean, let's just aim for consistency, for a decent way of playing football, and let's make, you know, Amazon Prime wish that they'd recorded next season instead of this one.
Yeah. Totally agreed. That will do it for us today, though. Steve, if you want to tell folks where they can find you, now would be a good time.
Well, thanks again, Kevin. It's always enjoyable coming on to chat with you. You're very knowledgeable, and it's great sort of shooting the breeze. Thank you very much. You can get me on Twitter at Steve McGookin, or for my non-football writing at northernslant.com. And Kev, if you don't mind, just finally a word of appreciation for the Tottenham Stadium employees and the NHS staff who were able to help make the stadium facilities available for, you know, whatever pandemic-related services the North Middlesex Hospital has needed since April. And I know the club's very proud of its role in working with the local community, so this was something that was important to do and important to acknowledge, I think, in these uncertain times. So thanks again.
Yeah, for sure. Glad that you mentioned that. And of course, glad to have spoken to you today. Thanks again. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.